You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of June 7th, 2016, and episode number 268. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, as always. This week's news, we got some crazy stuff this week. A little bit of sanity with some UFO sighting statistics. Unfortunately, we have some sad news, the passing of another great researcher. Bigfoot is in North Carolina. I don't know if he's on vacation. What he's doing down there. Rare woodpecker possibly found in Cuba. And UFO sighting leads to potential evidence. And like I mentioned, MUFON, the May sighting statistics, we'll have a little breakdown of that. And something unexpected in a graveyard. You might have heard about that story. That's an interesting one. And something even more unexpected in a freezer. Uh-oh. And we'll also talk briefly about a rise in volcanic eruptions. What is going on around the world? Plus, I'll have the book of the week. And if we have time, conferences, conventions, and a whole lot more. And this week's news is brought to you by the Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMHS schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuuniversity.org. And TFU is one of the educational outlets for Paranexus Anomalous Research Association, for which I am the executive director of. So I'm kind of the research wing of a pair of universities. So that's pretty cool. Pretty cool. What else is going on in my area of the woods? Well, I announced this last week. I'll be at the fourth annual Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event on August 20th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. John Ventry, Stan Gordon, and a few local speakers will also be on hand. They're going to be talking about strange weather, too, which is kind of cool to me. I love the weather. And I guess we all don't have a choice to like what happens. And they'll also be talking about strange other things. I've never been a part of a strange apparent, well, I guess some of them have been pretty strange, but strange on purpose events. There was the time of the black lines there at the Booth City at Ohio Paranormal Convention where, looked like somebody was, when they put the little tape down around somebody's body, we were doing that. That was pretty strange, but a lot of fun. And what else? Well, I was supposed to be on a show last Sunday, which was my producer's, CJ's, Cindy's birthday last Sunday. So if you're in the chat room, wish her a belated birthday if you haven't already. And June 5th, I was supposed to be on Squatch Detective Radio with host Steve Coles. But as luck would have it, I was out of chickens in the freezer. And there was a little technical problem. The owner of the network couldn't get his show on. So subsequently, Steve Coles' show was also bumped off the list for Sunday, but I've been invited back the following Sunday. Well, it'll be this coming Sunday, I guess. Sunday, June 12th. So I'll be on late night. It's late night for me, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock Eastern time. I'll be back on Squatch Detective Radio. I'm actually excited about this show because Steve Coles has been doing this for a long time, and especially his show and everything. It's beginnings of my show actually were partially based on an event he was studying or researching at the time, and he kind of helped debunk, and that was the 2008 Georgia Bigfoot hoax. And I mentioned Freezer earlier in the intro, and that had a little bit to do with a freezer as well. And that's kind of it, all I have going on right now. I did get a phone call today from Stan Gordon. I got to call him back. That was about the Kecksburg UFO event. I might be going there. Not sure yet. I got to look up some stuff to make sure my calendar is free. So I might be heading out there to hang out, get a table. Probably won't be speaking there. But it's a wacky, wild weekend down there in Kecksburg. And I've never been there. I've actually been around that area probably about 20 times. I've never been able to visit that area. So hopefully I'll be able to get down there for that event. So stay tuned. If anything does happen, I'll be putting it on social media. And if you have any kind of inkling to go to any kind of conference or convention, you can check out paranewsinsider.com and click on the events tab at the top. Pretty good list. It's probably, there's a few I'm missing. I don't know. I'd have to really dig down deep and look, but I try to add as many as I can. I do get a lot of emails from a lot of people, and I appreciate that. It's great that that I'm well known for this, and people really want to advertise their events, because that's what I want to do. I want to help the culture, bring people together, get some great networking opportunities, and help any way I can with these conferences, conventions. And like I said, I think it's a pretty darn good list. Go out there and look to see if you can find a better one. I dare you. And if you do, well, I'd like to steal some stuff from theirs and make mine a little bit better. So anyway, that is that. And now we're going to jump into some cryptid news. And that's where our sad news comes from this week. You know, it's I guess it's never a shock to hear about some of these researchers passing away. A lot of them are, you know, up there in age, especially in the cryptid field. And it was really sad. I actually found out this morning, very sad news this week, as was announced that researcher and cryptozoologist John Green passed away. He actually passed away back on May 28th. But John's family withheld the news until apparently yesterday. And Green is the author of a number of books, including The Best of Sasquatch Bigfoot, which was kind of a collection of his other books that he'd written earlier. He redid it in 2005. And that was just the book of the week back on March 29th of this year for the Paranormal News Insider. So followed his work pretty closely. And he's a... gosh, great researcher. Green was a journalist and ran a newspaper for over 30 years before realizing he could make more money from selling his cryptid books than publishing a newspaper. Green's work with Bigfoot spanned over 40 years, and he collected thousands of case files. And that's not an understatement. He literally has thousands. He was also known as the last surviving researcher of the Bluff Creek, California incident, where Jerry Crew and Ray Wallace found large tracks and made plaster casts, of which the news of that story is actually where the term Bigfoot came from, as an article was published in the Humboldt Times on October 4th, 1958. And John's impact on the field, it's been massive, and he's going to be sorely missed by those who knew him and those of us who have read his work and really appreciated his research and what he's provided to the field, and not really that much in the way of speculation. He started out actually as a skeptic, and he started printing stuff, publishing some stories that were actually against Bigfoot, or I guess back at the time it was Sasquatch, but he became a believer, and he became a fantastic researcher, and his books are awesome. It's his research. It's what he does. It's what he did and provided a lot of great information. And I was fortunate to, I was actually on vacation in, San Juan Island, which is off the coast of Washington State, just north of about 2.5 hours north of Seattle. And you have to take a ferry to get to the island. And the big city there is Friday Harbor. And there's like two cities on this island. And there is no like big name stores there. The biggest name store was Ace Hardware. We actually went to Ace Hardware to buy some stuff for the week that we were staying up there, because things are quite expensive. Gasoline is about $2 more per gallon than it is on the mainland. And milk is even more expensive, things like that. So we had groceries and stuff, but we needed some extra stuff. So anyway, I saw this spinner rack, and it had all these Bigfoot books. And it was the publishing company for which John Green's stuff was published, which was Hancock House. And I bought a handful of books. I spent pretty much all of my money that I had set aside for stuff on vacation. Didn't expect it, but I was looking for books anyway. I hadn't seen anything. And then, boom, there they were. So I bought a handful of books, and one of them was The Best of Sasquatch Bigfoot. And another one that I bought was actually going to be the book of the week this week. Bumped another book out of the way for that one. And I also bought some Christopher L. Murphy books as well. But yeah, John Green, it's not a shock. I mean, he was 89 years old, I believe. But still, anytime you lose anybody like that, and it's weird too, because this week we were having a kind of a discussion on Facebook. I commented on a discussion on Facebook about some of the new people that are coming into the Bigfoot cryptozoology field. And I've followed Lauren Coleman talking about how a lot of the researchers are getting older and passing away one by one. And it's a little scary to think that a lot of these guys that have been around a long time, that have provided the pathway for people such as myself to get into this field, are going away one by one. And those of us that are coming up, you know, through the field, through looking at these other guys, you know, we're running out of heroes. We're running out of people to learn from. We're running out of mentors. And, you know, I'm not a spring chicken either, but, you know, compared to some of these guys that have been doing this stuff for 30, 40 years, I'm still a newcomer. And not really, I don't consider myself a cryptozoologist, even though I've been referred to as that, because, well, obviously I published a book on cryptozoology. So I guess kind of by default, I could be. I don't refer to myself as one, but there's a lot of young people coming up in the field. I mentioned Jack Tessier from Australia on the show a couple of weeks ago, and became friends with him on Facebook and follow his work now. He's really, really intelligent, really great researcher. And he's looking at the people down there that study, it's Yowie, it's not really Sasquatch or Bigfoot. And Rex Gilroy is one of his mentors. And Rex Gilroy has been around quite a long time as well. And locally, there's another young gentleman I met at the Butler Paranormal Convention, Colin Schneider, who's also a very good up-and-coming young talent. And he's in high school. So he's very young. He's got a long way to go, but he's learned a lot, and he's very intelligent. He's blogging about all his knowledge, and he's just not just a cryptid person. He's an all-around anomalous researcher. So it's great to see some of the youth, some of these younger people coming in. Not that I'm ready to pass the torch, because mine's still kind of burning somewhat brightly, I would hope. You know, I think that we owe these young kids, you know, a chance to follow in our footsteps, or to be as good as we are or better. And my comment on one of the Facebook things was to teach them so they can be better than what we are, because I think that's the only way we're going to grow as anomalous researchers ourselves, or to have the field continue to develop, is to develop young talent and steer them away from the hoaxes and all the foul things that have come up in our generation. And we can return it to some greatness as long as we leave the field better than what we found. It sounds like, you know, one of those nice planetary messages of, you know, keeping the earth clean and everything else. Anyway, that's my little rant on the passing of John Green and the passing of our knowledge to the youth. So I feel all excited and giddy inside. But we're going to have to move on to some other cryptid news. North Carolina has been in the news lately for Bigfoot sightings. I don't know what's going on down there. Fox 28 out of South Bend and Elkhart, Indiana, a little bit a ways away from North Carolina. But anyway, they reported on an influx of Bigfoot sightings in a small town in North Carolina. Well, how small? Well, it has less than 700 residents and is literally a one-light town. Yes, it is. They only have one light. Not only that, but its name is Littleton. Littleton, North Carolina, is located just south of the Virginia border and has purportedly had several residents state that they have seen Bigfoot. Local resident Stephen Barcello thinks that there are many more who have seen it and just not coming forward. He said, quote, "There's a lot of people in this town who's had sightings who still won't come to talk to us because of fear of being ridiculed. And that's very common," unquote. Yeah, he's pretty much right. Barcella has investigated purported sightings of Bigfoot and has taken track castings of which he says four local rangers were unable to identify what left them. What makes this town such a hotspot for Bigfoot sightings? Well, it might not be Bigfoot, but big business. You see, Stephen Barcello is not only an investigator and researcher, but he is also the curator of the Cryptozoology and Paranormal Museum, which is located in Littleton. The museum is home to mostly Bigfoot artifacts and most local, including a small handful of local prints cast by Barcello himself. He also makes mention of Smithfield Genetics Lab, which conducts genetic work on hogs. And he thinks that quite possibly there is a half man, half pig running around the woods of North Carolina. Half man, half pig. Well, personally, I think that's half nonsense and half craziness, or maybe complete. What do you clean hogs with? That's right. Hogwash. Hogwash. Get it? No. Okay. Well, anyway, crickets again. Yeah, interesting story. And I've heard a couple of other sightings out of North Carolina. I'm not sure what to make of those as of yet, but interesting. But anytime you get a big story like this, yes, people are usually hesitant to talk about these things, and I've talked to quite a few of those people, and somebody beat me to it. Thanks, Paul, for putting the link in there. Well, I'm going to have to hire him too, him and Dita. It's not uncommon for when a story like this hits the media for a lot of people to more or less come out of the woodwork with their personal sightings or stories, even if they're historical. Even if they happen like, you know, months or even years prior, but it does shake people loose and they realize, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm not completely crazy and maybe I'll tell my story. So sometimes this does, you know, loosen the screws a little bit, whatever other thing I can think of to say about that. But it does allow people to talk. So maybe that's just what's happening there. I don't know. Keep an eye on that state to see what happens. And interesting read. This is a really interesting article. It's quite long, but I have a fascination with, oh, what would you call it? Real animals. No offense, Bigfoot. But animals like Eastern cougar, the Eastern mountain lion, that is supposedly extinct, and other animals that have had their time on Earth, but are seen in other places or in the places that they're supposed to be, but pretty much have died out. I love those stories because those are your tangible animals. These existed. We know they've existed. But they're extinct according to scientists. But we love to prove scientists wrong because that's what we do. And this one is another interesting animal that's not as passionate about as the mountain lions, but I've always kept one little keen, beady little eye on these guys, and that's about the ivory-billed woodpecker. These little guys, well, they're pretty big, actually. They've not been seen since the late 1930s in the United States. The conservation status is actually critically endangered, but essentially it's considered extinct because of the lack of sightings. And despite numerous purported sightings, there's been not enough evidence to really back it up. And there are no specimens in zoos or private collections. It's pretty much gone off the face of the earth. The ivory-billed woodpecker was the largest woodpecker in North America, with a body measuring 20 inches. It doesn't sound all that big, but think about it. This is a bird that bangs its head against a tree. It's pretty big. And a wingspan of around 30 inches. It's decent. A subspecies was also known to exist in Cuba, but has also since disappeared since 1987. Numerous purported sightings, like I mentioned, have given hope that these animals still exist out in nature, but the sightings are questionable and have never provided definitive proof. It's also been said that almost no forest area could sustain the ivory-billed woodpecker, as they require old-growth forest and around 10 square miles per pair to survive. That's quite the chunk of real estate. One of the people who purportedly saw an ivory-billed woodpecker back in 2004, Tim Gallagher, joined another ornithologist as well as a photographer and a writer on a journey to the jungles of eastern Cuba, north of an area where I'm sure you've probably heard of this place, Guantanamo. The article published on Audubon.com provides the it describes the hardship of travel. It provides a ton of information about their journey. It was, like I said, it was a long read, but it was worth it. I was engaged. You know, it was well worth the read. Lots of great, interesting information about what it takes to do an expedition of this type. The hardship of travel, having no roads, essentially driving on dirt roads, and they had to rely on oxen to free the car along trails when it got stuck. Having to filter and purify water once the potable water ran out, and many other reasons why many don't bother looking for this potential extinct bird, or let alone any other animal, out in nature, because it takes a lot of work, folks, a lot more than you can probably imagine. But reading this article, it puts it all in perspective. Martin Lammertink, also part of the 14-day expedition, used a tool that he designed that simulated the quick double knock associated with the ivory-billed and the still-existing pale-billed woodpecker. He was able to use a crude stick to hit a pine box, which was attached to a tree, and another handle swung close behind for the double knock. You'd have to see it. It's pretty cool. It's very simple, and they laugh about it, but it works. After a series of knocks, he was able to have a conversation with a pale-billed woodpecker on numerous occasions. And there are YouTube videos out there for that. If you're interested, just type in, oh, I don't know, pale-billed woodpecker conversation or Martin Lammertink. There's an 11-minute video. They talk about the box. I watched that as well. And they demonstrate it, and you do hear the woodpecker. It's pretty cool. It kind of reminds you of the Bigfoot thing, where you're beating trees with sticks and getting a response. But it's a little different because these really aren't all that intelligent of animals. They're just really hearing a noise and just repeating it. And while they did have that cool conversation with the other woodpecker there, the pale billed, unfortunately, the same wasn't so in Cuba with the ivory billed. The group also interviewed a number of witnesses who purportedly saw the bird in prior years, but at every turn, there was disappointing news. And like I mentioned, the article, very long read, lots of content. You know, it was an Audubon, so it was a long article, but it was very interesting and gave a lot of detail, like I mentioned. It will definitely give you a bit of respect for what happens during an expedition for lost creatures. You know, it's kind of one of those things where you look at National Geographic and you read the articles and you look at the pictures and you're like, oh, that looks great. you know, they saw this or they saw a polar bear or whatever. But until you really know what these people go through to go and research this stuff, to get out there and, not having water. I mean, my goodness, I can't even imagine that. And describe some of the diseases and some of the viral infections that happen and different things like that. That's got to be pretty scary. And all in the name of science, all in the name of finding birds. And, you know, it's cool that scientists are still looking for the ivory-billed woodpecker. Unfortunately, the end of the article, I guess I'll kind of ruin it for you, but if you still read it, I mean, still a ton of information in there. A ton of good stuff about the ivory-billed woodpecker itself and about researching and science, you know, just using science to find hidden animals in the woods or lost creatures, whatever. So it's pretty much a cryptozoology article. But unfortunately, at the end of it, they pretty much give up and say probably doesn't exist. And it's rather sad to hear the researchers say that, you know, to give up. But hopefully it was just their comments because of the 14-day excursion that they went on that was very tough to get through, I'm sure. But anyway, read it. Check it out. Audubon.org. If you're in the chat room through the one of the articles in there, I got two links here. I'm not sure which is what, but well worth the read. And I will be putting that through social media during the week. Yeah, social media. Come on. It's 2016. If you're on a radio show and you don't have Facebook, you don't have Twitter, you're not going to be on the air longer. Probably no one's listening to you. So it's kind of a necessary evil. It does take a big chunk of time to post stuff out there. It's fun, though. Come on. I'm not going to lie. Facebook.com/ParaNewsInsider. Find it there. Twitter, @ParaNewsInsider. Google+, ParaNewsInsider. So I'm on the three, the big three there, Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. So you can follow along with what's going on with the show. I've kind of gotten in the habit of posting the stories that I talk about live here. I'll post those during the week. So I'm a little bit behind. I mean, the news is a little old. It's a little out of date, I guess. But if anything big breaking happens that I'm kind of working on, I will also post it on social media. But the good thing is if you're not live in the chat room and not listening along and getting these links, whether I put them in there or somebody else in the chat room beats me to it, that's great. Then you'll have the opportunity to read about these stories for yourself and judge for yourself whether I'm right or wrong and check them out on social media. So I'll put those links during the week. I kind of spoon feed them out. I don't give you 20 Facebook posts in a day. That's just not me. I don't do that. I don't want to inundate anybody with stuff. So I keep it, you know, one or maybe even two a day. Depends on what's going on or how I feel, what kind of goofy mood I'm in. And all the episodes here, ParaNewsInsider.com or ParaNews Insider, episodes of the Paranormal News Insider are available at ParaNewsInsider.com and kind of a few different ways that they're archived. Right after the show is over, my producer, the hardest working person in Paranormal Radio, I guess that's her new title, she'll have that up on Mixcloud pretty much right away, and it gets posted out there through WCJV social media as well as my social media. And then I do a little bit of work where I put it up on my personal archives that will exist long after I'm gone at a Podbean site. So everything's archived after show 231. The ones prior to 231 are archived on ParaNewsInsider.com, which I just renewed the website for another year. So again, that's going to outlast me. One of these days, I got to put it in there for a lot longer than that. But anyway, it's also available on Stitcher, Spreaker, iTunes, you name it, it's out there. So check it out, the show that is. And yeah, that's right. You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And yeah, you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider. What else would you be listening to on a Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m.? Unless you're watching Jeopardy. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. In case you were wondering, and tonight, an hour after I'm over, an hour and a half from now, set your clock, set whatever you got to do. Take a nap. I don't know. We'll wait a half hour, please. Then take a nap. And be sure to tune in at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Mountain. I guess that's 6 Pacific for Hawaii. I don't know. And if you go the other way, I think it's on at 10 o'clock in Bermuda, I think, and 2 a.m. for my friends up in London. Well, I'm getting carried away here. Join Frank Lee. Yeah, Frank Lee is back. I don't know where he's been. He's been gone touring the country. I don't know what's going on with this guy. He, it must be nice to get paid to travel the countryside and investigate and stuff. You know, it's not in the payroll for me, but that's cool, Frank. He is going to have a special guest tonight. Paranormal investigator, researcher, and founder of Outcast Paranormal, Laura Spriggs, tonight. She's frequently on the chat in the chat room, so I'm sure she'll be there tonight. It's going to be an interesting show to recap what Frank has been doing the last couple of weeks. And that's tonight on Paranormalities and Ponderings Radio Show with host Frank Lee, right here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting at WCJVRadio.com. Lots of paranormal programming, lots of great programming here. I don't really listen to as much as I should. I'm a little too busy. But lots of great shows, lots of new shows going on too. So check it out. Check out the network. And almost every night something good is on. So now we got to go to the skies. We talk some UFO news here. And don't normally talk about MUFON cases all that much. But there's an interesting one that kind of caught my eye. And interesting, weird. It's rare to have a case like this. And this is an interesting case that has landed in the MUFON case management system. Case number 76542 is from a witness in Ladson, South Carolina. What's going on with the Carolinas, man? Weird. The witness stated she saw a red orb hovering above the tree line in her backyard. She stated she had seen the same red orb out front of her home twice before. The witness stated, quote, "It wasn't there for a long time, then it just disappeared. It silently hovered, moving forward, and went in reverse, which I found odd. It descended somewhat at an angle slowly and quietly, was like a leaf falling," unquote. Well, that doesn't sound all that great, but trust me, this is an interesting case. Hang in there. The entire sighting lasted about 10 seconds, according to the witness. So what makes this case so interesting? Well, this case may have left behind physical evidence. That's a rarity in the UFO world. The next morning, she saw black marks on her grass that she thought were burn marks. I don't know what this lady does in her spare time. Upon closer inspection, the witness noticed it was a silvery metallic substance on the grass that formed an odd pattern. So the witness called her sister in where else but North Carolina, who told her to contact MUFON. A MUFON field investigator arrived on scene and further interviewed the witness. They also checked for radiation from the area where the markings were and came up with negative results. Soil and vegetation samples were taken and are pending results. And hopefully they took control samples of the soil as well, because that's, you got to have that. You got to back up your stuff. So I'll keep an eye on that case. Usually the stuff doesn't really go anywhere. 9 times out of 10, most of these cases, as investigated, turn out to have a logical explanation or really no explanation at all. And it does not mean that they're necessarily UFOs. Well, I guess in the definition, unidentified flying object, they are, but it does not mean that they're aliens driving around on vacation, or people from the future driving around, whatever your theory is on that stuff. But interesting case. I thought that was interesting to actually have physical evidence left behind. You really don't hear about that all too often. So anything like that, anything that can have some sort of physical validation, you got to keep an eye on that. And yeah, it's June 7th, and we already have the setting statistics from MUFON for the month of May, which is awesome. And big thanks to Audrey Hamilton, my little link there to MUFON, one of many, but she's consistently now given me the sighting statistics the last couple of months here and keeping me well informed of what's going on behind the curtain. I am a MUFON member, so I do have access to this stuff, but they don't always send the emails. And they usually send them really late in the month, and I feel awkward talking about cases from 2 months ago. So it's great to be able to bring in this stuff in a timely fashion, and also from a listener to the show. So thank you, Audrey, for the second time. And they got one more comment. May 2016. Well, yeah. I made some predictions. And how did that go? Well, we'll talk about that in a second. First, a little quick recap of the last couple of months. Now, if you've been listening to the show or you know anything about MUFON sighting statistics, MUFON stands for Mutual UFO Network. In case you didn't know, I'm pretty sure you knew that, but that's okay. I got to cover that anyway. Last year, 2015, was a huge year for sighting statistics. The month of June, 1,402 sightings. That's going to be interesting to see how this current month that we're in is going to match up with that. The largest UFO sighting month in MUFON history, I'm pretty sure, with 1,180 of those coming from the United States. That was last year. So last May had 900 worldwide sightings, with 737 of them coming from right here in the United States. So how did that fare against for this year? Well, obviously, sightings have been down this year versus last year, because last year was a banner year for sightings. And I don't think it was because there were more UFOs buzzing around the skies. I think a lot of it had to do with Hangar One. It had a lot to do with MUFON getting out there a little bit more in some mainstream articles as well. But nonetheless, whatever they did worked. There was a lot of sightings. And not necessarily just because June was a huge month doesn't mean that all those sightings actually happened in June. They may have happened months ago, years ago, who knows. But it's just the number of reports that were reported. So it doesn't work that way, that all these reports actually are current or from this actual month. It could be from any time period. So that, looking at that, this year, it's been a little slower. Started out in January with 687 total reports. February dipped down a little bit, a couple less days than January. So, of course, I'm sure that helps. Plus a really crappier month of the year for weather. Can I say crappier on the radio? Well, I guess I did. 611 in February, 628 in March. And last month, I made a prediction, April. I predicted 670 worldwide reports, with 445 coming from the United States. I was a little off. It was actually 561 and 403, so it was a little off, just a little bit. Well, I'm always a little off, but I mean, I was a little off with the sighting statistics. But what did I do in the month of May? Well, I was pretty close. I actually did pretty decent, I think. I predicted 585 worldwide sightings. I'm sure Dita can back that up, that I said that, because she's taking notes. And 419 happened in the United States. That's my prediction. Okay, so 585 worldwide, 419 in the U.S. So I wasn't too far off. 545 worldwide reports, so I was off by 40, with 395 coming from the United States. It was only out by 24. Come on, that's not bad. So my prediction of worldwide reports is within 7% accuracy, and the U.S. reports is within 5.8%. I had to put the point in there just to, for, you know. So despite how Dita might feel about it, I think I was pretty close. Pretty good job. But I hadn't really thought about next month, but I'm going to throw a prediction out there when I'm done with the story. Canada was second with 47 reports. United Kingdom turned in 20. Germany had 9. Australia and India both had 8 each. And there was a total of 43 countries that turned in reports last month, although 24 of which only turned in one report. The top states last month were California, as always, with 51. Texas with 30. New York had 19. Arizona, Michigan, and Pennsylvania all had 18 reports each. Ohio had 17. Florida had 16. Washington State and North Carolina, there's that North Carolina again, they both turned in 12. Missouri had 11. And Georgia, New Jersey, and Tennessee had 10 reports each. And 32 remaining states had less than 10 reports each. Now, breaking that down per capita, per capita essentially is per 100,000 people. How many people per 100,000 people in these states saw UFOs? That's a kind of a good indicator to see which state actually had a higher concentration per capita, per person in that state versus others. Because, you know, California is going to be number one every time because they have the largest population. So 51 cases or reports, I should say, versus 30 in Texas. That sounds like a huge difference. But in reality, the population of California is much, much larger than Texas. And the top states I always mention, California, Texas, New York, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, those are all some of the leading states in population anyway. So, of course, they're always going to be towards the top. So in order to really get a good look at these statistics, you have to look at per capita. Then, of course, if they only have a handful, it really doesn't matter anyway. Like Alaska. Alaska topped out at the highest percentage of per capita with 0.54, with only 4 sightings as a state. So essentially, that's, think of it this way, it's 1 out of every 200,000 people in Alaska reported a UFO last month. That seems pretty insignificant. Again, it's only 4 sightings. New Mexico was second. They had 8 sightings, and they finished with a 0.38 per capita. So 0.38 of a person, that sounds brutal to cut somebody up in 0.38 of what they were, of a person out of 100,000 people saw UFOs in New Mexico. New Hampshire was 0.30 with 4 sightings. Arizona, 0.27 with 18. And so really looking at, just stopping for a second, Arizona with 18 sightings, 0.27. That's a little bit more significant than a state that only had a handful, you know, four sightings for Alaska and New Hampshire. 18 is a little bit better of a number with that, to go with that percentage. North Dakota was 0.27 as well, but they only had 2 sightings. Missouri was 0.18 with 11 sightings, and Washington State, 0.17 with 12 sightings. So California, with its big 51 reports, leading the way, paving the way with all those cases, they only finished with a 0.13 per capita. So only roughly 10% of a person out of 100,000 saw a UFO. So there you have it. And the sphere, which is normally the highest reported shape, was once again with 105. Triangle was the second most reported shape with 53. And again, big thanks to MUFON field investigator Audrey Hamilton, frequent listener of the show, thank you, for this month's sighting statistic. Well, I guess it's last month's sighting statistics. Now, June, let me think about this. 545, 670, it's kind of, well, 561, pretty close to 5. I'm going to say we're going to go, I'm going to go with 574 total worldwide reports, and let me think here, 411. That's my prediction for the month of June. Prediction, 574 total, 411. Let me write that. Okay, let me highlight that. That's good. It's boom. It's, there it is. So we'll see how I do next month. If I'm any closer, I'm going to start playing these numbers in the lottery because that's pretty cool. Anyway, that's your MUFON field, or MUFON sighting statistics for the month of May. Ghost news. Only one little story here in ghost news. A group of 12 people. This is a really cool story. If you've seen this, you're probably laughing about it already. A group of 12 people were on a ghost tour in a cemetery in the United Kingdom when they suddenly heard moans. moans. They got their money's worth, probably, right? Well, usually, that's a great sign and time to whip out a digital recorder or maybe a camera or two. That would have been beneficial in this case, maybe, well, especially the camera. Unfortunately, when the group went to investigate the noise, they spotted something else that had been whipped out, and a blonde woman and man were seen, doing the deed in some ivy. Then they noticed two cameramen were filming this scene, in addition to the other dozen people that probably had their cameras ready to go, and realized that they had stumbled upon a video of the pornographic type. The woman jumped up and pushed the man off, and the crew suddenly dispersed into the ivy. Well, apparently, they did not have permission to film in the public cemetery, and the tourists got a little more than they bargained for. Well, maybe they got a little less than they bargained for. Depends on how you look at it, I guess. The caretakers of the cemetery were shocked to hear of the event, but plan on keeping the gates open for those who wish to admire the cemetery and whatever else flaps in the breeze. And I'll be also willing to bet here that ticket sales for this ghost tour, they're going to go through the roof. They're going to start to rise. Yes, they are. Okay, that's enough of that. Man, where's this show going? This show's really gone downhill the last few weeks. All these raunchy stories. But hey, I don't make up the news. I just report it. And some other news here. Some really creepy stuff here. Too good to pass up because it's not technically paranormal. It's just out there. And wow, is it out there. So anyway, North Carolina, again. A woman in Goldsboro, North Carolina, got a great deal on a deep freezer when she bought it from a neighbor for $30. It's a good deal, right? Well, there was one downside in that the unidentified purchaser of the freezer would have to wait a couple of weeks to open it due to a project with a local church. Well, that's what the seller had told her. Apparently, she was told by the neighbor that the freezer was used as a time capsule for a class project with the Sunday school at the church. Seems legit, right? Well, the church would come in a couple of weeks, collect the items, and then the woman would be free to keep the deep freezer. However, the church never came. And 3 weeks later, she opened the freezer. And after she opened the freezer, she ran out of her apartment and called 911. And the call went something like this. Quote, "I have a serious problem. My neighbor sold me a deep freezer. I just opened it and there's a body in there, I think. I am freaking out," unquote. Well, that wasn't good acting, but I guess you get the gist. Police came to the apartment and confirmed that the remains were in fact human. The woman told police that the woman who sold her the freezer stated she was headed to West Virginia to be with her mother, who had just entered a nursing home. Then, just as you did, she realized the little light went on in the back of her mind, and she realized that the woman in the freezer was probably her mother. The buyer of the freezer stated, quote, "She was just the sweetest lady. I mean, quiet, kept to herself, stayed at home. Just unbelievable how she could just stick her mom in a freezer," unquote. Well, she not only stuck her mother in a freezer, but she sold her to an unknown neighbor for $30. Wow. The North Carolina Medical Examiner's Office positively identified the deceased woman and found that she died of natural causes, so no signs of foul play were detected. However, police are investigating the case as a felony concealing or failing to notify the death of a person. Yeah, you can't do that, folks. You know, you have to report these things. It's, insurance and all these legality things. You kind of have to do that. Yeah, creepy. Just creepy. And I know it's not paranormal, but I just stuck it out there. I guess that's, I don't know. Just creepy. And who knows, maybe the freezer is going to be haunted now. So maybe we'll have a haunted freezer to talk about in the news in the upcoming weeks. I don't know. And another story, speaking of talking about for oncoming weeks, kind of been following this if you've been listening to the show, and you better have. Been talking a lot about these volcanic eruptions, lots of earthquakes, not even storms and stuff, but these volcanoes and earthquakes. And separately, I've been talking about also the large meteor sightings, a lot of the bright flashes that have been seen lately and booming noises. You know, I don't think they're all combined, but it's interesting about these volcanoes. The volcanoes and earthquakes are combined. They're kind of related. And, you know, there was a little panic earlier this year. There was a lot of volcanic eruptions and leading in from last year as well. So there was some concern about this. And then scientists pretty much came out and said, eh, nothing to worry about. But as of May 30th, and this is an article coming from strangesounds.org, which is another great resource I've been using for my news as of late. May 30th, there's been 41 volcanic eruptions around the world. I mean, it doesn't sound like much. 41, eh, it's a big planet, right? And earlier this year, I stated there should be no real cause for concern, as we're looking at an average year for eruptions at the time. However, again, the folks at strangesounds.org have put together some interesting graphics that seem a little concerning. Between 2000 and 2015, the average yearly volcanic eruptions were 43 for the whole year. We're already at 41 and have 207 days left to go on the year. If my fingers and toes are telling the truth. Looking at past year averages from 1945 to 2000, the yearly average was 35 eruptions per year. Eruptions spiked to nearly 50 a year until 2008, when a decline began, when it averaged around 30. Now, the second half of 2015, there were 30 new volcanic eruptions, and the trend seems to be continuing. So it's a little concerning. I mean, that's a lot of volcanoes erupting in such a short span of time. Over 90. You know, if you add them all together, in a year's time, we've had 90, over 90 eruptions. That's almost double of the record of what they have in a given year. So, I mean, are the folks at Strange Sounds blowing their lids a bit early, or is there really a cause for concern? I haven't read anything out there from scientists, so I don't know if they have anything to comment about that or not. But yeah, to me, that's a little concerning and something to definitely keep an eye on as time goes through. And gosh, who knows? We've been lucky here in the United States not to have too much going on, but it's just a matter of time. And, you know, Mount St. Helens erupted in 1980, and that was a huge deal for everybody. I remember ash all over the place. So you never know. There's talk about Yellowstone and all that. It's a little crazy, because it could be a very earth-altering event if it happens pretty much anywhere in the world. It doesn't have to happen in our own backyard for it to alter our weather, alter the temperature, alter the landscape, even push planet Earth off askew. Even an earthquake can move the Earth in space. Believe it or not, that's creepy to think about, but it's very scary. And yeah, we're at the whim of the Earth here. And speaking at the whim, I'm at the whim of time. So I'm going to quickly jump into the book of the week this week. The book of the week this week, like I mentioned, I had to shift around. I had a different book in mind. Actually, it was cryptozoology related. Got to get more ghost books in there, but maybe UFO stuff too. I'll shift it around. I'll take care of it as I do. The book is by John Green. And I mentioned before, I had the Best of Sasquatch Bigfoot back on March 29th. That was the book of the week. Well, this book of the week this week is Sasquatch, The Apes Among Us. This is a very healthy book. I guess that's one way to put it. Very healthy, because it's very thick. Over 400 pages thick. 400, I think it's 492 here. Let me get the link in there. Let me get a picture of that so you can see the front of the book. This is actually the reprint. It was originally done in 1978. So it's a little bit older of a book, and this is the cover of the book that I actually own, the updated 2005 edition of Sasquatch, The Apes Among Us by John Green, who, again, recently passed away. The book is a little expensive. That's why I put the Barnes & Noble link in there. You can get that from $33.38. I think it's out of print again. So Yeah, you might want to get that. Again, I was lucky. I got it off of a spinner rack when I was on vacation in Washington. I spent all my money on Bigfoot books. I actually bought a kid's Bigfoot book, too, if I remember correctly. It's I think it's $72 on Amazon, so it's a bit pricey. You can also get it at HancockHouse.com. Their website says it's also out of stock, 492 pages. And I'll tell you quick about the book. It's full of a lot of great material. It's kind of a combination. I mentioned Steve Cole's book last week. That's chock full of theoretical stuff based on his observations. So it's not a complete leap of faith. It's not just making stuff up or correlating things and just coming up with random hypotheses. It's actually taking information and kind of looking at an educational step towards what's going on. And John Green did the same thing in this book, based on animal descriptions, based on case reports, and again, published in 1978, based on his work for probably the first 30 years of his career, going back into the 50s. So this is before all the tainted stuff that we see on television. And I mean, granted, yeah, they had hoaxes and stuff back then. I'm not going to sugarcoat the past, but a different culture, a different time. And combined the descriptions with the vast number of reports, and it's quite a read. It took me, I think almost, well, I've mentioned this before. I read several books at the same time. This book took quite a long time to actually read this thing because there was just so much involved in it. But it's interesting because it does go back in time. It does cover the Bluff Creek incident. Does talk about the Roger Patterson movie. And it just goes through a lot of historical stuff that he was, a part of, and it does kind of break down a lot of cases that he's been involved in over the last few years. Of that time frame, so it kind of reaches back to when he started to kind of point to 1978 when it was published, and just a ton of great information in this book. And again, yeah, it's dated, and the new one you get 2005. It's not really updated. I mean, I don't have the other book, but it's great. Some of the maps and things are actually in the other book that I bought, which is a kind of a culmination of his other books, The Best of Sasquatch Bigfoot, but still a lot of great information. It does talk a little bit about the Eastern United States as well as Florida reports, which was interesting as well, because this guy was one of the big guys at the time. So he got cases from all over the place sent to him for dissemination, which is great when you have big name people that people send reports to. There's just so many of us now, so many investigators involved in the paranormal and cryptozoology and stuff that these case reports, unfortunately, kind of get spread out and not really combined in any shape or fashion. And some people research and investigate these cases a little bit better than others do and aren't so quick to believe everything that they read. And, that's just how things go. You know, some people do the work. Some people just take the way out to get the story out there so they can, have their 15 minutes of fame based on somebody else's 15 minutes of fame. I don't know. It's a lot of 15 minutes. So Sasquatch, The Apes Among Us by the late John Green, who sadly passed away just over a week ago now. And another great researcher gone. So with that, it's 8 o'clock already. It's time to go. Well, that being said, big thanks to Cindy again, the hardest working person that you don't get to see behind the scenes there doing all the work. She's quite busy all the time putting on this show. It's not just me mumbling into a microphone for an hour. There's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes. And unless you've actually been a part of something like this, working with a radio network, you might not appreciate it. Lots of work. And also to everybody in the chat room, really appreciate you guys hanging out there. Dita, Paul, the usual suspects, Cheryl's always there, and Audrey for tuning in. I know she's in there. I saw her when I first started out. Everybody for listening in, whether it's an archive, whether it's live in the chat room, highly appreciate it. Thank you for tuning in. And as always, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.